money in your sock. Them women in the Pelham, Lord, gonna put you on the rock. Oh, little baby, your daddy's got them deep Pelham blues. Oh, mama, daddy's got them deep Pelham blues.
It is Josh Graves and Kenny Baker doing Deep Elm Blues, and it is the first shot in what's going to be a really rich journey through the life and times of one of the true American innovators. And we have our guest today, author of a new book, or editor of a new book, Bluegrass Blues Man. It's Josh Graves, a memoir. It is my pleasure to welcome to the studio, and many, many will know his voice when he speaks. He's Fred Bartenstein. Fred, thanks for being here.
Good morning.
You've been a bluegrass presence on these airwaves. I want to say that you were in Banks of the Ohio, and that you presented that show here for many years. But before that...
Right. Yeah, I've been on WISO since the 80s. I had a program called Country Music College of the Air, and we're calling that class back into session this noon. And then, let's see, I had Bluegrass Countdown for a while, where we played the top 10. And then went into Banks of the Ohio, and that was between about 2002 and 2008.
It's altogether fitting and proper, I feel, that you have done this work, that you've done, and that you would be back here today to help us get a little peek behind the curtain. The interesting thing that I didn't fully understand about this book, this book is in the words of Josh Graves. You haven't written a biography, but
I've edited his own work. Josh Graves, who lived between 1927 and 2006, was a great storyteller, and so a lot of people interviewed him, and there were all these interviews lying around from the early 90s, but they had never done a book-length treatment of it. So it's like a museum curator with pieces of a mosaic lying all over the floor. I've put them together in order and brought it from different sources, corrected some mistakes, untangled it. And I think Josh's voice speaks through this really beautifully. I'm proud that it's the man, Josh Graves, and I just got to help get the word out.
We'll find out a little bit more about how it was that you became drawn to this man. It's kind of a sweet personal story to that. But you have even some accountings of very early years for him.
Yeah, let's hear a little bit of Josh's voice from the book. This is the beginning of the book in which he talks about his birth. I was born September 27th, 1927, in Tellico Plains in Tennessee. Nothing there but mountains, and that's what I love. The doctor that brought me into the world was named Dr. Rogers. He could drink more whiskey than you can carry in a truck. I was born at home. There wasn't no such thing as a hospital. All the kids were. A midwife would be there, and then the old doctor would come later and see if everything was all right. I remember when my baby brother was born, in 3 days, my mama was out hanging out or washing. You don't see that now. Tough people, you know. My grandmother Graves was a full-blooded Cherokee. She lived to be 103 years old. Every morning and every night, she'd turn that jug up and have her shot of moonshine. She had an old sweet gum toothbrush and hated me worse than a snake. And I did her. She came from Murphy, North Carolina, across old Hanging Dog Mountain from Tellico Plains, Tennessee. My dad, Troy Graves, worked for Babcock Lumber Company in Tellico. Daddy stood 5'6" and he weighed near 175 pounds, built like a rock. I never sassed him or talked back to him. I wasn't afraid of him, but I knew what he'd do. He moved us in order to work for Alcoa in Maryville. We moved in a wagon, took 3 days. I was only 2 or 3 years old. My mother was part Cherokee. She played an old pump organ. I had 3 brothers and 2 sisters. Coming up in the 30s with 6 kids, man, it wasn't much fun. Mama would send us down to the road every morning to see if any game had been run over and killed during the night. Burlap for curtains, kerosene lamps, and after that, the Depression hit. So this is Josh Graves. He goes on for about 170 pages in this beautiful East Tennessee style.
You have a website, by the way, that people can seek and find. Is this audio collected and available in addition to, like, as a supplement to this book? Can we
That'd be a good idea. We're going to hear a couple of cuts from a CD that came out in 1995 called Josh Graves, King of the Dobro, in which people talk about him and tell some of the story that I'm telling today. But the music, the best of Josh Graves' music, is scattered around in a lot of little places. If you want to hear it, a lot of it, I'm going to be doing an extended version of this class on November the 3rd with Tom Duffy on Midnight Ramble. We're calling that the Geeks Edition.
The Geeks Edition of Bluegrass Blues Man, Josh Graves, a memoir, our beloved presence on these airwaves. Fred Bartenstein has taken the actual words of this American original and put them in a timeline. I really appreciate your analogy of a mosaic, bringing it all back together and bringing a gorgeous focus on this true original. We have a medley of things here that...
Let me set this up, yeah. If I may. So... In a couple of words, Josh Graves' career. He drops out of high school in the first year, 14 years old, and goes on the road as a traveling musician. And he plays in different bands, and he gets in Wilmley and Stoney Cooper and their band in Wheeling, West Virginia. And then he goes out with Mack Wiseman, and he comes back to Nashville. And an old friend of his, actually the guy that showed him how to play three-fingered style on the dobro, Earl Scruggs,
old
who was
friend.
The big innovator on the banjo. Earl Scruggs finds out that Josh Graves is in Nashville and between jobs, and they recruit him to the band. They bring Josh Graves into the Foggy Mountain Boys, which up until that time is just a classic, traditional, great bluegrass band. They bring him in to play string bass, but tell him to bring his old dobro along. And they're trying out an idea of adding a dobro to a bluegrass band. They take him to a coffee shop one morning after he's been with the band for 2 months. Josh figures that they're going to fire him that day.
Oh.
He said they didn't say anything for 10 solid minutes. And then finally, Lester Flatt says, "Would you rather play the bass, Josh, or the dobro?" He says, "That's like taking Brer Rabbit down to the briar patch." "Yes, of course I'd rather play the dobro." "Well, we were hoping you would say that because we're wanting to change our sound to be less like Bill Monroe." What we're going to hear is Josh Graves' dobro tracks from the very first recording session that he ever did in 1955. We've taken everything but his dobro music out. And in these four breaks, Josh Graves creates the style that all dobro players until this day, Jerry Douglas, Rob Ikes, Mike Aldridge, all of them are building on. So this is the main source, 1955, September the 2nd.
Thank you.
I'm astonished that Dobro was not a part of bluegrass before that meeting, because it seems so integral to what I feel comforted by the sound of bluegrass.
Right. Well, it was actually kind of scandalous in the bluegrass world that they brought this non-Bill Monroe instrument into a bluegrass band. They weren't sure it was going to work at first. But you know, Nikki, we call this book Bluegrass Blues Man, and one of the untold stories, I think, in bluegrass music is this arrival of Josh Graves into Flatten Scruggs' band at precisely the moment in 1955 that rock and roll is hitting. Now, a modern listener might not remember, but if you're old enough to remember Elvis back in the mid-50s, what rock and roll was back in those days was white men playing black music. And so I don't think it's a coincidence that Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs, canny business people as well as great musicians, decided, let's bring something into our band in 1955, which is when country music and bluegrass are having a very rough time, because the whole industry is going to rock and roll. Let's bring in a white guy who can play bluegrass country style, but who learned from black musicians and who can bring
blues
the blues to our sound. And I think that this was one of the things that helped Flatten Scruggs to be the most successful bluegrass band in history. They never lost a beat during the whole 1950s and 1960s when other bands were finding it very difficult.
So when rock and roll was blooming, a whole new style of bluegrass bloomed simultaneously
thanks
to this great collaboration.
And we're going to show you that in the next cut. This tune is called Big Black Train. It was recorded in 1958, January the 14th, 1958. Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs got the song from Stan Johnson and the Blue Chips, who recorded it on Ruby Records in Hamilton, Ohio, in rockabilly style. And Josh Graves and his influence is all over this record. You listen to this and tell me if this is your grandfather's bluegrass music. 1958, Lester Flatt, Earl Scruggs, and the Foggy Mountain Boys.
Well, I had the blues. But now they're gone. I'm on a big black freight train, and we're moving on. I'm on a big black train, and I'm moving on. I'm on a big black train, and I'm soon be gone. Well, this big black train, it keeps moving on. It's moving down the railroad track. Well, you cheated on me, baby, and you told me lies. You said that you was gonna laugh every time I cried. Well, this big black train, we're telling you goodbye. I'm on a big black train, and I'm moving alone. I'm on a big black train, and I'll soon be gone. Well, this big black train, it keeps moving on.
That's flat. Collette and Scruggs on 91.3 WYSO, and we're talking in the studio with Fred Bartenstein, a longtime bluegrass musical presence on these airwaves, and author of the new book featuring the work of that dobro player, Josh Graves. It's called Bluegrass Blues Man, a memoir. And I appreciate that you're helping us see this very pivotal moment in time for American music.
You know, before we go there, I realized as you said the word dobro, we probably ought to explain what a dobro is for people that don't know. The bluegrass people know. But a dobro, picture a guitar with a very bright, shiny hubcap on the front.
On the front.
And it's turned sideways, horizontally. The strings are lifted up and not fretted, but played with a steel bar in your left hand, picks in your right hand.
So it's all a sliding sound, the tone created. It's not set increments.
Think
it's
Hawaiian.
Slide. Yes.
It's a Hawaiian guitar, resonator guitar.
Slack key guitar, resonator guitar.
Well, slack key is fretted, but Hawaiian guitar, slide guitar, steel guitar, same thing.
Pedal
They're
steel,
all part of that
steel.
Family.
Yes.
Right.
All right.
So you were saying Lester Flatterell, Scruggs and the Foggy Mountain Boys, who came, by the way, they had been members of Bill Monroe's Bluegrass Boys. That's how bluegrass got its name, from Bill Monroe's band, the Bluegrass Boys, in the mid-1940s. 1948, Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs go off on their own and start their own band called Foggy Mountain Boys. And they were great, but they really sounded a lot like Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys.
Almost
no surprise.
Replica in a way, sure.
So what happened when Josh Graves came? The sound changed. It shifted. So we're going to play a little mashup that demonstrates that. I'm Head Over Heels in Love with You was recorded by Flatt and Scruggs in 1950. We're going to hear a little bit of that version, and then we're going to fast forward to 1970. Josh Graves is now in the band. Earl Scruggs is gone, but this is the same song done in Graves-influenced style. It's hard to imagine they're the same song. I'm Head Over Heels in Love with You, pre-Graves and with Graves.
I'll go across the ocean if I don't change my notion. I just got to forget you if I can. Oh, I'm feeling so blue, I don't know what to do, for I'm head over heels in love with you. Sad and lonely, I'm thinking of you only. I just can't sleep when I lay down. I'm feeling so blue, I don't know what to do,
because I'm
head over heels in love with you. Do is sit and worry. I just can't bear the thought of losing you. I'm feeling so blue, I don't know what to do,
because I'm
head over heels in love with you. To be forgiven, this life ain't worth living if I have to sit and worry over you. I'm feeling so blue, I don't know what to do,
because I'm
head over heels in love with you.
Because I'm
head over heels in love with you.
How about that?
Different, huh?
There's a swing, there's a groove, there's a, You described it as looseness in that second version that, wow.
Right. Jump style is what I think what a jazz historian would call it. Comes out of the 1930s, but it comes from the deep well of black music, which Josh Graves drank from deeply as a child in East Tennessee, learned directly from black musicians. And he also listened to the right records. Lightnin' Hopkins was one of his big influences, and he maintained a friendship with Lightnin' Hopkins throughout his life. When we say Josh Graves was the bluegrass blues man, it also goes deeper than his music, his whole personal style. He had a gold tooth. He wore the snappy headgear. He comported himself entirely like a blues man. Later in the show, I think we'll play a little cut from Marty Stewart, where Marty says that as a child in Mississippi, he was confused when he saw Josh Graves on the Flat and Scruggs television show. And he reminded him more of the black blues men from Philadelphia, Mississippi, where Marty had grown up. And so Josh walks that fence.
We're talking with Fred Bartenstein, whose new book, Bluegrass Blues Man, a memoir. It is the story of Josh Graves that Fred has edited together, basically a lifetime of interviews that he's given, and put it into a chronological order and helped us see the true genius and brilliance of this American original. It seems as though everything lined up for Josh. I mean, everything and lined up for all for American music in this moment.
It was a fascinating time. Man, the mid-1950s are when the musical atom split. And when youth music came in, when the baby boom started hitting and they weren't listening to what their parents were listening to, a fascinating time. But, you know, Nikki, so far we've talked about Josh Graves, the dobro player in the Flat and Scruggs band, and that's how most people think about
him,
sure, in the bluegrass world. But he was more than that. He was also a songwriter. He wrote a top 10 song for Wilma Lee and Stoney Cooper in the 1950s, and lots of standards that the listeners to Down Home Bluegrass wouldn't occur to them that these were Josh Graves songs. He also was a studio sideman in Nashville. He recorded with Boz Scaggs. He recorded with lots of famous musicians. I was trying to think this morning why he wasn't on the Circle album. And the answer is probably that Lester Flatt, whose band he was in at the time, wouldn't let him record with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band.
Why?
Earl was on that. Well,
interesting.
These musicians had some interesting personality quirks back in these days. The other thing that made Josh particularly fascinating as a subject, as a writer, was that he was a comedian. For years, Flat and Scruggs, who would do a 2.5-hour show in little country schoolhouses and courtrooms and outdoor shows around mostly the South and the mountainous area, 2.5 hours is a lot of time to fill with one band. So they'd create these bands within a band. One of the things they would do is let Josh Graves and the bass player Jake Tullock go for about 20 minutes in a comedy thing. And we found a slice of audio from about 1960 in which Josh Graves is the straight man, Jake Tullock is the full comedian. They're on stage with Flat and Scruggs at the Grand Ole Opry. The announcer is T. Tommy Cottrell.
T. Tommy.
What's on your mind, Les?
Would you like to have the honor of introducing Cousin Jake and Uncle Josh to the audience?
Well, yes, if all the ladies will promise not to faint.
Oh, for Pete's sake, come on, introduce us,
Okay, okay, okay. Evidently, you two boys haven't met. Cousin Jake, this is Uncle Josh.
How you doing, honey? Oh, not that way, you idiot, to the audience. That's who you're supposed to introduce us to.
Oh, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, our featured guests, Cousin Jake and Uncle Josh.
Hey! We're going to sing a song for you right now.
Yes, and we'd like to dedicate it to all the fathers in the world who've got small babies at home. Baby, you got to quit that noise.
Baby, you've got to quit that noise. No more what you want to do, you can. Baby, you've got to quit that noise.
Now I saw you down on the wrong side of town, laughing and playing with the boys. Now, darling, you know that that kind of stuff don't go.
Baby, you've got to quit that noise. Baby, you've got to quit that noise. No more fooling with the boys. You're mine or you ain't. What you want to do, you can't. Baby, you've got to quit that noise.
That you're smart when you try to break my heart, just like a child with its toy. Get back on the beam or get out of my dreams.
Baby, you've got to quit that noise. Baby, you've got to quit that noise. No more fooling with the boys. You're mine or you ain't. What you wanna do, you can't. Baby, you've got to quit that noise.
Thank you, Cousin Jake and Uncle Josh. Two of the finest boys I ever knew right there.
That's for sure, Les, and they really got a lot of talent, too.
I'll say. That was recorded back in
1959.
Live. The sort of a flexibility there. I don't think they were talking about a little baby.
No, that was a show within a show. That was an example of Cousin Jake and Uncle Josh within Flattin' Scruggs and the Foggy Mountain Boys.
And by 10 years later, though, Josh was no longer...
Well, Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs broke up. It was a terrible, terrible moment in bluegrass history because they had been iconic, the most successful bluegrass band in history. Yeah, they had the theme song in Bonnie and Clyde. They had a TV show in close to 100 markets. They were a major, major act. Columbia recording a contract. I understood that they were getting $45,000 a year for their Columbia contract, which may not sound like a lot now, but for bluegrass, it was huge.
What happened?
What happened was the Columbia contract required that for that big money, whether the record sold or not, they had to record the songs that Columbia asked them to sing. And Columbia decided in their wisdom that Flattin' Scruggs should be pitched as a folk act. This is during
the
folk music era.
Yeah.
So they were singing Bob Dylan songs and highwayman songs. And Earl was okay with this, and his sons thought it was cool. Randy and Gary were starting to play on the sessions. Lester Flatt hated it. Lester, I think I can say this word over the air, referred to hippies as those long-haired sons of bees. So there was no love lost between Lester Flatt and what Josh Graves called the counterculture. Mm-hmm. Earl Scruggs was tired by this point of the music that they were playing, and he wanted to bring his sons into the band. They were young musicians who loved the Byrds, who wanted to make music more along those lines. So in 1969, they split up. Lester Flatt had a band that was called the Nashville Grass. Josh Graves stayed with Lester for a couple of years, and then fell out with Lester. One day, Earl Scruggs' son came over to Josh's house. They'd been raised with his children, of course, and found out that Josh was unemployed. Went home, told his dad, and his dad brought Josh into the Earl Scruggs Review. During this time, we're talking 1971 to about 1973 or 74, Josh was the only musician in the band who wasn't plugged in. Vassar Clements is in the band at this time. Everybody else is playing electrical. Josh says his head rang for 10 minutes after every show. They were playing for 5,000-10,000 kids at major college campuses.
But also made some real waves. In fact, were almost considered heretical for this sort of evolutionary step in bluegrass.
And yet, remember that cut we heard, Big Black Train? It grows. The next song we hear, which is live at, I think, Kansas State University, features Josh Graves and Vassar Clements with the Earl Scruggs Review. And you'll see that this sound is a direct straight line from that big black train that we heard earlier, the rock and roll influence.
So they took all this grief for just picking up on a thread that they may have dropped back a few stitches and just carrying it forward. So it's an interesting, another interesting confluence in this story.
Right. Hugely successful. Here's Carolina Boogie with the Earl Scruggs Review.
My name is Joe Wilson, and I'm the director of the National Council for the Traditional Arts in Washington, D.C. There's nothing in American sound more distinctive than that of the dobro guitar. There's a richness, a depth, a special vivid quality. It has so much voice that it seems almost human. We have it because of Josh Graves. He took it up when it was moribund, an obsolescent, discarded technical oddity. Musical instruments are more than wood, metal, and glue. They take on the spirit of great players. They become extensions of their creativity. The dobro has the spirit of Josh. Like Josh, it can twinkle and smile and growl. It can pull at your heartstrings and make you laugh. Thank you, Josh.
Taste is something different, but something that makes a lot of sense in its own right.
That was Joe Wilson, who was the head of the National Council for Traditional Arts. He speaks so eloquently about all traditional music concepts, and that was from that album I mentioned earlier, Josh Graves, King of the Dobro.
We're talking with Fred Bartenstein, whose new book is just out. You just got the books
Saturday. The box came. It was so cool.
It's such a beautiful picture on the front. It's a picture from overhead of Josh Graves that when you're looking from overhead, you're looking at the instrument full on. So you see the top of his beautiful hat and his gorgeous resonator guitar.
And what I read into this, bluegrass blues man, you're looking down the hat, you see the guitar. And it's only when you look at his hands that you can tell that he's Caucasian. Because Josh is on the line between black and white music. A number of people have said that, you know, he could have gone either way.
And it's so funny that I was a full-grown adult when I learned that the distinction between race and hillbilly music was a concoction. It was a machination of marketing people to keep everything, the races all tidily marketed. But the truth is, there was everything about ebb and flow of these musicians influencing one another. And as you mentioned, Lightning Hopkins, a huge influence on Josh. And it's true of almost every musician of that era. There
right.
was a great deal of interplay. I'm so comforted by that.
And from this part of East Tennessee, confusing it even further, we know that Josh Graves' paternal grandmother was full-blooded Cherokee, and his maternal grandmother was part Cherokee, so there's a third piece in the mix. It's American. as Nikki was saying.
Isn't it? You can find out more. And in fact, I think you can order a copy of your own if you go to fredbartenstein.com. That's Fred, BartenStein.com. And there's a link there to the book page, and you can order your own copy. Tell me a little bit about how you were drawn to Josh Graves, American Original Innovator, as a subject.
Well, when I was 6 years old, my mother would go back to Virginia to have all of her children because she wanted Virginia on our birth certificates.
That is
awesome. And my youngest brother was being born, and that's when I fell in love with bluegrass on the radio down in southwestern Virginia. So I was a bluegrass nut ever since then. At the age of 14, I had the fortune to attend the very first bluegrass music festival in history in Fincastle, Virginia.
I just got chills.
I was able to get a ride down with a neighbor. We lived about 40 miles up the road in the Shenandoah Valley. And then 2 years after that, I started working for this man that put on what at the time was the only bluegrass festival in the world, and started working as a stage announcer, as a talent director, eventually a magazine editor. So I brought Josh Graves on stage many, many times during my career, knew him, and what a great player he was. He's one of the pantheon of musical geniuses in the bluegrass style.
You just got the books, and you're actually heading down to Nashville for a special...
Tomorrow morning. That doesn't mean that our house is going to be left unattended, folks. tomorrow morning, I'm going down to Nashville for a signing event, and we're going to launch on what would have been Josh Graves' 85th birthday. He died September 30, 2006, a few days into his 79th birthday.
Yeah.
And so we're going to have a big do. Josh's kids and his widow are coming.
Oh, how nice.
The World of Bluegrass at the Nashville Convention Center Thursday. Now, let's wind up here by bringing ourselves into the present. Jerry Douglas, who tours with Alison Krauss and also appears as a solo musician, is probably the top dog dobro player today.
He's got a great new record that we've been enjoying where he does a lot of collaborations, the likes of Paul Simon and Mumford & Sons and many, many more. But he's a big influence as a direct descendant of Josh Graves.
Totally. And so what I think we ought to do, Nikki, is hear from Jerry Douglas. And then I think we ought to fade right from that into hearing from Marty Stewart, who's a country music bluegrass superstar.
And historian in his own right, isn't he? He really takes it seriously to make sure these stories are preserved.
Exactly. And so then, maybe after Marty says a few words, we'll set up the live concert after that.
Great.
So here's Jerry Douglas.
One of the finest, fastest, most masterful players of today's generation is Jerry Douglas. You know him from his work with the Whites and Ricky Skaggs and just about everybody else who made records in Nashville in the last 10 years. Here he is talking about his first meeting with Uncle Josh.
I started playing dobro when I was 10 years old, and where I lived in northeastern Ohio, no one even knew what a dobro was. After I'd been playing dobro for about 3 years, I went to a festival in Ottawa, Ohio, and just hung around and watched the bands And Josh was playing with Lester Flatt, and I went to a campfire, and some people were standing around playing their instruments, and they said, "Oh, Josh Graves is coming after a while." So I waited around till about probably midnight, and Josh showed up, and I was playing a dobro that I thought, you know, was the first dobro that I had, and I thought it was pretty good. And he had his dobro with him, and he said, "Here, you play mine. I'll play yours." And it was the most amazing thing for me, not only because his own dobro sounded so good and so much better than mine, but just that he would let me play it, you know. And so right away I just felt like I knew this guy, and that I would know him even better later, I'd hoped at least.
We all know who Marty Stewart is. He's a major country music star. A few may not realize how great a musician he really is or how long he's been at it. Marty and Uncle Josh have been close friends for a long, long time.
I think Uncle Josh has more heart and soul. than most 20 people put together. He has more soul than probably any other bluegrass musician I've ever played with. I was raised down in Mississippi where there were a lot of black players, street players, around Philadelphia at this place called the Busy Bee Cafe. They all wore their hat kind of, you know, they all had a style the way they wore that hat. A lot of gold teeth and the way they played and just the way they talked and, you know, hung around. I thought they were real characters. I loved them when I was a kid. And when Flat and Scruggs would come on my TV down in Mississippi, here was Uncle Josh in his hat playing this blues guitar with that gold tooth shining. He confused me. And when I heard him play, he really confused me because a lot of white people wish they could play that way. Not a lot of them can.
That was Marty Stewart from the album Josh Graves, King of the Dobro. And after Josh Graves recorded the interviews with which I made this book, Bluegrass Blues Man, he lived another 12 years, and they weren't great years for Josh. He had a number of health challenges, including diabetes that resulted in the amputation of both his legs. It did not stop him, however, from playing. And he continued to tour. He was a partner with Kenny Baker. They played in this area quite a bit. And he continued to record. And we're going to wind up our little visit to Josh Graves and Bluegrass Blues Man with this incredible live show. Marty Stewart put it out on an album called Live at the Ryman. July the 24th, 2003, Josh Graves, 3 years before he died, a double amputee in a wheelchair with his Dobro guitar strapped down to a stand, comes on stage with Marty Stewart. And it's a killer concert. We're going to hear a couple of songs from it.
We have with us tonight an honored guest. When I was a little boy down in Mississippi, I saw him on the TV holding a guitar like that, wearing that skid lid, had that gold tooth shining. He was a cat among cats. In my mind, he's the king of the Dobro. Would you please make welcome Mr. Uncle Josh. Come here, Josh. Uncle Josh. Well, you ought to been uptown, see that train come down, hear that whistle blow 100 miles, 100 miles, 100 miles. You can hear that whistle blow 100 miles. Come on, Charlie. These old ties, tear in my eye, trying to read your letter from my home, from my home, from my home. I'm trying to read your letter from my home. Come on, Marty. Thank you.
Now, if y'all kind of soften down just a little bit, and I'm going to show you some of them licks that Uncle Jim taught me up there in them mountains when I was just about 8 or 9 years old.
All right.
Are you ready for it?
I can't hardly wait.
All right.
Uncle Josh Graves, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
King of the Dobro.
Thank you so much. Somebody's going to give me the flowers while I'm living. Thank you.
How do you know that's for you?
Well, she respects her elders, you see. It's a pleasure to get to come here and work with Marty and all the boys tonight. And I've had some bad luck in the last 2 or 3 years. And the doctors gave me 3 months to live, and I went up there and I couldn't pay my bill, and they gave me 3 more months. Shape I'm in. I don't know who caused the shape I'm in. Blame it on the women, cause the wine is my best friend. Great big woman and a little bitty bottle of wine. Great big woman and a little bitty bottle of wine. Don't care to lose a woman, but I sure want to keep a wine. Woman, she done tromped me down. Great big woman, she done tromped me down. Grab me and Uncle Josh, we're gonna head for Birmingham. Yeah, 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 yeah. Great big woman and a little bitty bottle of wine. Great big woman and a little bitty bottle of wine. Don't care to lose a woman, but she wanna keep her wine. Goes to us. Ladies and gentlemen, how about a hand for the one and only Uncle Josh Gray?
Fred Bartenstein, the author of the new book featuring these Dobro, the generator of these Dobro sounds. It's called Bluegrass Blues Man, a memoir, edited by Fred Bartenstein, our great longtime presence here on these radio airwaves. Huge congratulations on the new book. You can find out more at fredbartenstein.com. There's a link to the book. Listen to that.
Great big woman and a little bit of butter.
Fred Bartenstein, thanks for taking a moment and talking with us and sharing this great, great story and sort of bringing a little bit of extra and sort of much-deserved attention to a true innovator.
It's been really fun, Nikki. I've enjoyed it.
If you want to hear the geek version of this program, you are going to want to mark your calendar for November 3rd. That's a Saturday, of course, from 6, or I should say until 9, until midnight. Midnight Ramble, our guest today, Fred Bartenstein, will be on with our beloved Tom Duffy for a truly insightful look into the life and times of this great man. Again, it's Bluegrass Blues Man, Josh Graves, a memoir edited by Fred Bartenstein. Thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.